Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Possibly the best game of the Premier League season as Liverpool and Manchester City in a 4-goal thriller. We got big giants like Real Madrid, Barcelona with a terrible weekend. Bayern Munich as well. What is happening in the world of soccer and football? We got Jimmy Conrad. We got Heath Pierce. Weekend recap. Que Golazo begins right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to Que Golazo, our weekend recap. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We are live, meaning that you can leave your comments, your grievances, and make sure that you write them and type them so we can read them on the screen and hopefully answer your questions. Please be kind to us. We're kind to you. Be kind to us. But let's get into it. We got Heath Pierce and Jimmy Conrad. We're going to talk about the Premier League, of course, and much, 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 much more. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher as well. First of all, Heath Pierce, how are you, bud?
Hey, I'm good. You know what I was thinking when you were doing that intro again? What? You get me real hyped when you do these. It reminded me of Grand Theft Auto where you can change the stations, you know, and you go into the next station. It's like, hey, welcome everybody. And you can leave it on that station. That's what it reminded me of, man. Like that that was well delivered.
Hey, I take it as a massive compliment, HP. Jimmy Conrad, what's up, man?
Listen, I know there's some incredible storylines to dive into today, but I just want to mention that my youngest daughter's U10 rec team beat the first place team today, 2-1.
Let's go.
Stop it, haters. I see you out there. You went down.
Hey.
They're like the PSG of under 10 rec girls teams, and they just went down. Okay. I took them down because my team fought a little bit harder, just like Ren did. Yeah. Like that tie-in? Go on, Heath. What are you going to say?
I was going to say, do they still do the thing where in the tournament, if you beat the best team in the tournament and you don't win the tournament, you still sort of won the tournament, you know? Like if you knock out, like if you play the best team in the group stages and you beat them and they go on to win it, you kind of like, yeah, well, we beat the team that ended up winning the tournament. That was always the silver lining for my youth teams.
That sounds like you're an FC Sheriff fan, and if Real Madrid going to win the Champions League, Sheriff are going to be considered the best team.
Hey, I will say, go back. I wrote the copy for that Sheriff game. If you go and read the copy that was on the lower third in that game, we predicted that there's a new Sheriff in town. We used the joke before anybody else did. Just, you know, go check it out.
Before anybody else. I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it. Jimmy, did you get in a fight with a soccer mom as well on your forehead as well? I'm seeing, like, I know that the other fans won, but.
No, I'm still going through puberty, everybody. I've got a big giant pimple that I didn't let I just can't let it fester. I had to go grab it and try to squeeze it out. It doesn't, you know what? This is a different conversation.
You're still a handsome man. And so are these two. Hey, welcome to the weekend recap. As we mentioned, please leave a comment. And we begin with Liverpool Man City. But listen, I want to talk about this straight off the bat. I lay off a pall on Twitter. Que Golazo Twitter pod as well retweeted it. I really wanted to get into it straight away. And we can talk about the game afterwards, of course. But this is the question I begin, boys. Because honestly, it was just magic what I saw today from the Egyptian king. Mohamed Salah. Simple question. Is he the best player in the world, Jimmy Conrad?
I'm going to say with a short answer, yes. I think that it'd be hard to find somebody who's been as influential as him and as consistent that even if the team isn't firing on all cylinders for Liverpool, he still finds a way to make a difference, whether it's with a pass or whether it's with like some scintillating run through 5 defenders to tuck it home like he did today. The guy is incredible right now. And really, I don't know if he gets enough credit for how consistent he's been over the last few years, even when Liverpool didn't have their best season, he was still a guy putting up some good numbers.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of current form, and it's hard to build like that window of time because you start to allow other strikers into that conversation. But currently, yes. If you saw in that match, and I know we're going to talk about it more in detail, but as Jimmy mentioned, there were periods where he doesn't have much of an impact where Man City started settled into the game after the first 20 minutes or so and looked very, very good. And you go, man, you expect more from this Liverpool team that's the most in-form attacking team in the world right now. And then it happens. One chance, 2 chances, and he can just destroy defenses. His touches, just the intent of his play is unbelievable. So I would say currently at this exact moment, best striker in the world.
That's the reason why I brought up the poll, everybody. I wanted to get everybody's opinion. And as you can see from the polls, it's still going. It's very, very tight. Some people are saying no. Some people are saying yes. I just think this. Quickest player to reach 100 goals in the Premier League. Okay, that's over the course of his career in the Premier League. Of course, that's one thing. But right now, he leads the Premier League with 6 goals, 3 assists. But it's to your points as well. Today, it wasn't just the goal, which to me is a goal of the season contender in any league. Absolutely ridiculous what he did. You know, turning Bernardo Silva one way, then entering the box. But the assist to Sadio Mane as well. You know, I just think that consistently speaking right now, at this moment, I don't think there is a better play than Mohamed Salah. There's an argument, Karim Benzema, Robert Lewandowski, Erling Haaland. We can talk about all these players.
Just for context, LME, I'm only interrupting just because I want to say, do you think results have to run concurrently with being considered the best player in the world? Because Karim Benzema obviously could be in the conversation, but Madrid are coming off a terrible week where they only got one result, which was a draw against Villarreal to start it, lost to Sheriff, and then they lost to Espanyol for only the second time in 25 years, which is unacceptable. So, yes, you can make a shout for him, but I think Mo Salah, and because Liverpool are giving positive results, I think that matters. So maybe somebody from Napoli deserves a shout as well. I'm not sure, but
no, maybe. I just
lost midweek. I don't know.
In terms of the fact that Liverpool remains the undefeated team in the Premier League, they obviously are still, they're second right now to Chelsea in the table. But it's what Mohamed Salah continues to do, especially from the turnaround of the season. It's my opinion, but to your point, if you think there's another argument with somebody else, we would love to hear from you. Tell us who you think deserves it. At this moment, for me, Mohamed Salah is the best player in the world. But Heath, let's jump into the game itself. Game of the season in the Premier League, I think. So far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, from the start, I was like, okay, Liverpool have this. They had City was having trouble connecting passes. They were having trouble getting out of spaces. They looked like they were on different pages for the first 20 or so minutes. Then it shifted back the other way to Manchester City, who I thought were really good. I mean, they were just, I mean, obviously we ended up seeing James Milner play, and it ended up not being Grealish on that side. It ended up being Phil Foden, and Phil Foden was just having a day with him, and to a point where there was an argument that James Milner should have been sent off on a challenge in the second half for a second yellow.
Well, what do you think?
I actually thought that the broadcasters called it well on there, where they said if this was an isolated incident, right? If he didn't have a yellow before, you would give him a yellow for that. Yeah. But because it was kind of a weak yellow, it's hard to have that be the second one. But I do think in that situation, the game changes. And I thought it was a lazy foul that should have been a second yellow card. That's my take on it. But I do think that it was one of those ones where the ref saw like, man, this is going to change the whole dynamic of the game. I can give one last final warning here and let them kind of bail Liverpool out of that one. But it was a complete mismatch there for James Milner. And James Milner, I thought, did a great job for decent periods of doing the best that he can and given the circumstances of playing against Phil Foden, who was just really lively from the start. But absolutely the best game of the season in terms of quality, in terms of chances, in terms of world-class attacks, really challenging some of the best defenders in the world. And we've been talking about how good City have been defensively, or that they found like a group of leaders in the back line there. And on the flip side, with Liverpool having the healthiest team they've had in a year, give or take James Milner. I just thought it was a really, really exciting game. And I actually felt that a 2-2 draw felt pretty fair. Would love to get your take on that as well.
Yeah, I would say it was a fair result for sure. What I will say that I was surprised about was Liverpool being somewhat reluctant in the first half, that they weren't trying to press. It's almost like they gave Manchester City too much respect, which I found quite odd, especially because they had fans at Anfield, that they weren't trying to play on the front foot, that they were reacting in a lot of different ways and giving, there's one opportunity where Bernardo Silva did like 3 circles in midfield and ended up springing somebody wide that led to a good chance, So it was really interesting, I thought. But what I really loved was their response to that. And if you're a coach or if you're a player and things aren't going well for you, how do you respond when things aren't going well? And coming out of halftime, the signal of intent, they got a good cross. Milner was getting a little bit higher up the field, which I think put City on the back foot. And then they score first. Obviously, Mo Salah doing some good work there to kind of out of the buildup phase. And then Joao Cancelo, little lazy defending, as we like to say at times, which ultimately unlocked Mo Salah to play that nice ball into to Mane to really get it going. I think what's probably frustrating from Liverpool's standpoint is not only that first half, like what happened? Why were we so reluctant and somewhat nonchalant? But we also gave up 2 leads, and that needs to be addressed as well, even though I thought the result was fair. And I think both managers said as much after the game that it was pretty fair, all things considered. Now, Manchester City got lucky by Kevin De Bruyne not getting the red card against PSG. The referee's going in their favor for that one. So, sure, maybe Milner deserved the second yellow, but hey, everything balances out. That just happened to happen pretty quick right after that PSG thing. So they still gave up a goal, though. Man City still scored, even though Milner didn't get thrown out. It was a great game, and I think a great advertisement for the league. Every time maybe the Premier League feels a little bit boring, they come up with an absolutely unbelievable 90 minutes. And actually, that second 45 was tremendous.
Yeah, and to your point, by the way, about Liverpool reacting, I thought Man City did really well to react as well after Milner didn't get that second yellow and, of course, the game. But it was a very, very, very good game. We would love to hear from you guys if you have any comments on that. But I think the winner here is Chelsea, to be honest, just looking at that and making sure that they retain top. But it was a great, great game. If you have a question or a comment, please make sure that you send it our way. All right, let's talk about the rest of the Premier League here, the roundup, because there was a lot of action as well all over. By the way, Watford sack Cisco Munoz. He's done, obviously, after that loss to
Is that Leeds, the guy you know? That sang the thong song?
Let me see that check. Okay, so he's done. According to Fabrizio Romano, Claudio Ranieri will return, and he will take over Watford, which will be interesting as well. Who do you think, boys? Let's begin with you, he fears again. We'll get the sack in the Premier League next. Who's next? I know Jimmy's answer.
Yeah,
Who's next, he fears?
I would agree with Steve Bruce being very high on this list, but I'm going to go with Daniel Farke just because I just don't know what Norwich is doing. Now, having said that, they got their first point of the season. Unfortunately, it was against Burnley, and you need to, you know, that's their second chance against playing a lower team in the league and a chance to get opportunities. They got their first point. That does help. I've been in relegation battles before where every point matters and you start to change that belief. But it all comes down to just the fact of the signings that they made. Again, no disrespect to the fact that they have limited ability to spend. But if you have limited ability to spend, you see with the Brentfords and you see with other clubs that they change the philosophy of how they spend, right? Their recruiting policy, the way that they use stats or data to drive better signings. And so for me, that's one that I just don't see him getting out of. Just one point after I mean, obviously, Steve Bruce only has three draws, I think. 3 points, but three of those being those points coming from draws after seven. So I'm going to go with Farke just because it just doesn't look good. And I don't think it's good enough. Again, we've talked about this before. You got to be able to motivate your warriors. And I've played against teams much better than me and come out on top or gotten results that keep me alive. And you don't have to go, you know, necessarily match their ability to play. You just have to make it really hard for them and make it a very long day for them. And I think Norwich is really struggling to figure out how they're going to do that. So I could see him being the change, although I think he's pretty well liked by the club.
Yeah, what I'll jump in and say is, though, I would love Steve Bruce to move on and we can bring in somebody that's maybe a little younger, maybe has some exciting vibe about him. There's plenty of managers. Eddie Howe maybe could come out and take over, obviously, with his Premier League experience. That said, I feel like Mike Ashley, the owner of Newcastle's, him and Steve Bruce are buddies. You know, I feel like they're drinking buddies. You're not going to fire a drinking buddy unless it's completely obvious you can sell the club or whatever. So I'm actually going to talk about Southampton and Ralph Hasenhüttl because they have yet to win a game in the Premier League so far. After losing Danny Ings, they just really lost. I know they brought Armstrong in, and he does provide a little bit of a spark, but no wins in the Premier League, like I said.
3-1 Chelsea this weekend, yep.
And the only wins on the season are in the League Cup. So they beat Newport 8-0, which they should. And then they beat Sheffield United in penalties. It was 2-2. It's just, they're just struggling in a lot of different ways. And I think it might be time for him to move on. And I think he's been hanging on by a thread, I think, for the last 5, 6, 7 months. Every time he loses to Leicester City 9-0, whatever, it's always like, he's got to be getting fired this time. Now they have the international break, potentially give him a breather. They just lost to Chelsea. And I know they had the 0-0 draw recently with City, but coming out of the break, they got Leeds at home and Burnley at home. And if they can't get results in those, it's time for this dude to go. Like, there's not even a question. If you can't get results against a Leeds team that's underperforming and a Burnley team that's underperforming, who you're competing against for the relegation zone right now, then you have to, the players need to hear a different voice.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, to your point, they're 17th, 4 points, only three from Norwich. So we're talking about Daniel Farke, I think, Hasenhüttl. But losing Danny Ings is massive. And the only victory that really you can say from Southampton is when I don't know if James Ward-Prowse would think of this as a victory anymore, but signing that new contract in the summer. So it's a fair argument. But, you know, Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds United got their first win. Crystal Palace, Patrick Vieira came back from behind to draw against Leicester. Wolves won, etc. And that was it from the Premier League. Well, let's talk about Manchester United against Everton, because at the very beginning of this game, Jimmy Conrad, Manchester United were doing well. Everton suddenly sticking around. And Andrews Townsend with the absolute trolling. Great counter, by the way. But it ends Manchester United 1, Everton 1. Let me ask you this. We'll talk about the game. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I mean, we're talking about coaches that really should be fired here. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I mean, with all due respect, this is not good enough. I was listening to Gabby Aguilar on Talk Sports saying, what are you doing sitting Cristiano Ronaldo at home this early in the season? Thoughts on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Jimmy?
For me, it's less about Cristiano Ronaldo that drives me crazy. It's more about that he's continuing to play Fred and McTominay in the double pivot. Like, I just, you know how far you're going to get with those two players in that particular area of the field. You're going to probably lose in a couple semifinals and some cup competitions. You might get to a final or whatever, but, and you're not going to crack on to actually go on to win the league and be a legit title contender.
Yeah.
You've gotten as far as you're going to get with those two guys. Something has to change. Now, obviously he's seen something that he feels a little bit vulnerable when those guys don't play or together, at least. I just don't understand where you knew Everton and under Rafa Benitez were going to come out and counter. That's how they scored. That's how Newcastle got their one goal at Old Trafford as well. They sit back, they absorb. And you go up 1-0 on a good goal by Anthony Martial, good switch of the point of attack, good play to get it from one side to the other, of course, and a good finish. But then you have Fred, who has an opportunity to kill the play, and he doesn't. Like, that's the only reason you have the guy in there is to break up plays and stop counters. And he doesn't, and Everton scores. So that frustrates me. But they don't have Calvert-Lewin, and they don't have Richarlison. They have, like, they're missing two of their best attacking players. And I just don't understand. You have to win that game. So, yes, that was a must-win game. And for me, it was less about Ronaldo. It was more about some of the choices you made in the middle of the field. And I think that let them down, ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, this was an exciting one for me only because it was a chance to see the team without Ronaldo. And again, I'm not bothered about Ronaldo. In fact, I think the home games, and I agree with Jimmy, the home games, you're playing with a double pivot, which feels like you're playing not to lose again. You're playing conservatively. You're not with, you know, maybe there's comfort there, but can you take a risk? Can you try some of the other players? We're still seeing Jadon Sancho, no matter how the rotation goes, coming off the bench. I don't know what the deal with him is, because I don't know if anybody watched the Bundesliga last year or the last couple seasons, but he was unbelievable. Now, how that converts into the Premier League, something different. How that converts into a team like Manchester United, also something different. But certainly seems like a little bit of a concern. But you had Martial on, you had Edinson Cavani, and I thought it was, okay, here we go. A different look. How dynamic can this team be? And it just feels like they're still missing pieces. And I feel like when you look at the depth of the squad, they have all the pieces. But for some reason, when they tinker or they change the lineup or they play without Ronaldo, you go, okay, these guys will have more freedom. It won't be like first time I get the ball, I look for Ronaldo and then figure out what I'm going to do next. But it's still lacking some of that creativity. Obviously, Bruno Fernandes feels a bigger role. Ronaldo's off the field and he can take his half chances and hit bangers. But overall, I look at this as like almost like there's a tension between the manager and the players in terms of freedom or confidence or belief in the system that it feels like there's something bubbling there of like, are we all heading in the right direction?
Yeah. You know, my producer, I wanted to segue to your question, Jimmy. I wanted to a question to you, to both of you, but you know, my producer Des Norris wants me to ask about Sancho and how frustrated he must be at the arrival of Ronaldo. But to be honest with you, that's also equally asked of Van de Beek. This is a player that comes to Manchester United with a tremendous amount of respect, really good technically, and he is a shadow of himself. And it's not his fault, I think, most of it. He just, well, I don't know what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does to not get the best out of players. So I guess the question returns. In terms of Van de Beek, these sort of bench players, you know, they're anywhere else I could see them flourish. How frustrated must Sancho and others be with the arrival of yet another attacking player like Ronaldo? But it's not just Ronaldo's scapegoat. It's just in general, just what I'm looking at and how Solskjaer is going to get the best out of them.
What Van de Beek's fault was, and I'll start with him, is that he signed with Manchester United in the first place.
Yes, that's the only fault he had. Yes.
Honestly, I will say that when I first heard that he signed with Manchester United, I was like, Why? Where? Where's he going to fit? Yeah. I mean, you knew right away, like, where's he going to fit? You got Pogba, you got Bruno Fernandes already, and they were already committed to having a double pivot. And can Van de Beek play one of those? He can, but is that, can he do some of that thankless hard running in the Premier League? There's always that tag. Well, is he good enough to play in the Premier League? Dude, yeah, he's good enough to play in the Premier League, you bastards. So that always, like, yes, he can do it. You got to give him a run of games, though. Like, he never gets a run of games. How can the guy ever establish a flow or a rhythm? And the same thing applies to Jadon Sancho. You want him to get used to playing in the Premier League? Dude, give that guy like 5-6 games in a row, and I'm sure he'll get caught up to speed very, very quickly. But if you stop and start his time, and he's getting minutes here and there and all that good stuff, it's going to be hard for him to ever feel comfortable. And maybe that's how Ole Gunnar likes to manage. There are managers out there like that, but it's not necessarily going to work for these two players in particular. I do want to say, though, to Heath's point really quick, is that it was 1-0 at halftime for Manchester United, scoring the 43rd minute. At the 57th minute, they brought on the players that everybody was clamoring for at the start. Cristiano Ronaldo's in for Cavani, and Jadon Sancho comes in for Anthony Martial. 8 minutes later, they give up the goal on a counter to Alonso Townsend. So I just almost, and I don't do this often, but almost to be an apologist for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in some ways, he did everything everybody asked of him, and it still didn't work. He was kind of in a no-win situation.
Before he jumped, let me just interrupt. I watched this whole game, and I'm going to tell you something, and I did a little analogy on Twitter. I said that, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is what Michael Bay was to Pearl Harbor, to this squad. He relies so much on stars to solve a terrible production. I was watching the whole lead at halftime, and Bruno Fernandes was having a fantastic game. Fantastic game. But if he doesn't click, everybody's lost. Meaning that to me, Solskjaer is the kind of manager that relies so much on individual talent that it doesn't matter. You could have three Ronaldos out there. There is no shape sometimes. He's a very nice man, a very big fan of his playing career. I'm sure he's a great man manager. Players like him. But to me, tactically, he's not it. And I thought that was a good example of what we saw against Everton. Sorry, Heath.
I think just to pick up on that point, when you look back at the Liverpool-Man City game, what you saw were teams with individual brilliance, moments of individual brilliance, right? Combination play, individual moments to create goal-scoring opportunities. You saw world-class moments come out of what looked like a very team-oriented shape and approach to the game. And Manchester United doesn't feel like that right now. They don't feel like they have this team where then you put these players and you build the parameters of how this team is going to play. And then within those parameters, you see the creativity and world-class come out of it. You see, again, these, and people called it from the start, from the very first game with Ronaldo, where the energy was so high and you're like, wow, it is going to be very hard if this is what it's going to take for them to win. And it's continuing, you know, and I called a little bit of a bluff on that early on where I was like, hey, that energy is infectious and injury, blah, blah, blah. But you're actually seeing that as the crutch because it doesn't seem like there is a coherent plan for the players to all buy into that helps them protect the lead, that helps them to win games, to help them have a rhythm and just a style of play. And it feels like a bunch of these pieces. And that goes to Jadon Sancho, where you should know that he's emotional. He played poorly. When his transfer fell through last time, he was pretty poor for a while. And now you've brought him in after this exhausting failed transfer before. You bring him in, and now he's not getting his run. And if you're looking at it, then you bring in Ronaldo, you're like, man, you guys screwed me. You guys screwed me. And I put everything into this. I live this in my and Jimmy, you know what it's like. When something like that is happening, you live it a million times in your head, right? It's a dream come true for a player like Sancho to go to a club like Manchester United, in theory. And now you get in there and you go, hey, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't how it was. You guys brought in all this guy. I'm happy to compete for a spot, but if I got to start 100 yards back in a 200 yards race, I'm never going to be able to win. And that mentality becomes hard to get over when you go in. And then you talk about the Premier League and the pressures of it, the media and all the scrutiny of all these things of every touch gets overanalyzed. And, you know, it's okay. It's a big place to be in Germany, but when you play in England, everybody's talking about you all the time, your life, when you step out of the house, you're being watched and everything like that. It can be a lot. It's already a big enough adjustment, I guess is what I'm saying. And so if you're not getting the backing of the club or at least the benefit of the doubt to get some run of games or some run of form to prove that you're more than just a bit part player that plays the last 20 minutes to bring a spark, I think it's going to be hard to see the best of Sancho as long as he has this sort of backing from the club at the moment.
Yeah.
I just want to add, there was a play there at the end against Everton where Jadon Sancho lost the ball in midfield. And that led to Everton actually scoring, but they got called offside, thankfully for Jadon Sancho. So what's hard for him to couple with everything that he just said, when he comes on, he's got to be lights out. Like, he can't.
That's very tough for him to do that.
Clearly it is. I mean, he still can't feel sorry for himself. You have plenty of time to be emotional about that type of stuff after the game. You can talk to whoever you're, you know, your safety net is of communicators.
But Jimmy, there's a difference between lights out and the feeling like you have to be lights out, right? Going out and playing because you're confident versus being feeling like I've got to do more and more and more, which leads to bad turnovers. This leads to bad moments where you dribble when you should pass and all those things where you get stuck in your own head. Right. There's a big difference between being very good and saying I have to be very good every chance or I'm not going to play. And then you end up playing poorly.
I think when we come to an agreement of Manchester United right now is individuals still not fully comprehending exactly what is need to be asked of them. And that falls under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in my opinion. By the way, Manchester United's next 10 games, Leicester City away, Atalanta at home, Liverpool at home, Tottenham away, Atalanta, Manchester City, Watford, Villarreal, Chelsea, Arsenal. It's not going to be easy. So we'll see how they do towards those 10 games. All right, let's throw those Premier League fixtures one more time. Palace, Leicester, we talked about 2-0. Villa lost to Tottenham 2-1. Heung-min Son was just ridiculous in that game. West Ham loses to Brentford, by the way, in stoppage time. Brentford have only lost to Brighton so far, 4 points off the top right now. Liverpool, Man City, we talked about 2-0. And Manchester United, Everton, we talked about Burnley, Norwich. We talked about Chelsea beats Southampton. Leeds beats Watford. Wolves beats Newcastle.
What? I didn't hear that.
And Brighton and Arsenal, a stalemate. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Giants that we were recently discussing about. Not the New York Giants, not the San Francisco Giants, but the Giants, the presumed Giants, PSG. How did they do in Liga? What about Real Madrid? What about Barcelona? What about Bayern Munich? Well, we'll let you know. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey, everybody, we are back. If you're watching live on YouTube, we just continue. If you're listening on audio, thank you so much. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, please leave a nice review and give us a comment or a question. Let's talk about PSG. They faced Rennes. They lost 2-0. They had Eminem in there, Mbappe. They had Messi. They had Neymar. They had Di Maria in there. Donnarumma started in goal. It was all feeling, all right, maybe they'll get something going. But guess what? Their perfect record comes to an end. There was Conference League against Champions League, and the former won. Jimmy, at the start of the season, you said, you know, if PSG don't win every single game, or at least they don't finish it undefeated, it's a massive failure. So who's to blame? Who's to blame for this one?
What a bunch of losers. I'm going to start there with these guys. No, actually, what I think happens is that Mauricio Pochettino just tries, hey, maybe this is our best starting lineup, right? And then after the game, oh, God, we lost. He scratches that 11 down. He's like, all right, let's just try another starting. I just don't think he knows what his best starting 11 is. And yes, he's putting all the players out there that we want to see. But is it the right balance of guys? And that's going to be the biggest challenge for him. Not only, I would say, from a tactical and technical and physical standpoint, but also emotionally and mentally, and the egos that you have to keep in check. Obviously, Manchester United's going through something similar. Another thing that I want to discuss and bring up is I'm glad it's not easy for these guys. I'm glad they're getting their butts kicked. I'm glad you can't just go buy any trophy that you want and that you actually have to earn things. And what they're going to find out very quickly, they already found it out in the Champions League with Club Brugge and now today with Rennes, is you still have to go out there and do the bare minimum, which is run your ass off, make plays, do the little things that helped you get successful in the first place, the things that you started off when you were a kid before everybody thought you were super talented. You can't get away from those basics. And if that was implemented into the team, then they would obviously go on to win 99% of their games. But because there's a lot of luxury players and because those guys have become so accustomed to not having to defend, it's going to be hard for them because they need, I don't know, Heath and I talk about it sometimes with the U.S. team. You need a lot of guys playing at 7 or 8. You can't have guys one day being 3s and then one day being 10s. There has to be more consistency with that lineup, and we're not seeing it. And unfortunately, on the first goal of this one, which is right before halftime, which gave Rennes a lot of confidence going into it, and then they scored 1 minute after halftime, is Nuno Mendes, the 18-year-old on the other side, just got caught ball watching, which led to the first goal. Now, they didn't get any shots on goal, PSG, so this is an on Nuno Mendes, but it just seems like if it's some, they're just kind of sharing who makes the mistakes. Every week it's somebody different.
Zero shots on target, Jimmy Conrad.
Which is ridiculous.
PSG. Yeah.
You know, and when I think about that, that just seems like an ego problem and a rhythm problem. And I'm not saying ego is bad. They all have egos. You need ego to be good. But if you've watched them, I go back to when PSG won 4-2 against Brest earlier on in the season. They looked already vulnerable to weaker teams, like getting up for the occasion. That was before most of these big stars were playing, but it looked like a giant playing against a minnow, and they struggled to get up for the pitch, the game, the tempo, the style of play. It wasn't pretty. And teams are going to continue to try to make them scrap like that. What the other thing I wanted to talk about with regard to that is if you looked at PSG in the past, they always had one player that would sort of drift their way back slowly. And that would be Neymar, or maybe it would be Mbappe, or they sort of all, they would look at each other and be like, it's your turn to play defense. And now you've got three players who you have to look at each other, or four even, where they look at each other and go, whose turn is it to play defense? And if you looked in the Man City game, there were long periods where there was two or three of them slowly walking backward. Now, again, moments of brilliance helped them to beat actually who I thought were a decent side that day, Man City. But they beat them on individual moments of brilliance. You can't have to rely on that again, similar to Manchester United, where you have, you know, world-class moments of brilliance to win every game. But to not create chances, that is just a rhythm. I just can't see a world in which you have players like that where you just don't have really dangerous chances all day long. Now, maybe a goalkeeper stands on his head and the defense plays lights out and things don't go your way, and you can create this string of like 10 things that make it so a PSG loses to a Rennes without, you know, when they have like 30 shots on target or whatever. That can happen. That has happened. But the fact that they don't even generate these types of opportunities with the players they have on the field makes me wonder, again, what these players are looking for, or what again is off, because you're throwing the biggest player in the world in Messi into a mix of already sort of a fractured relationship between Mbappe and Neymar and where they're at in their careers and whose team is it and all those things. And like, that was, if you think about the dynamic of that locker room, there couldn't be any other thing outside of Ronaldo or Messi arriving that could sort of create more tension than was already there. And now it's there. And again, it's not on those guys. It's on the manager. It's on the team to step up. And I'm not necessarily worried about that. But
and fair play to Rennes as well, by the way. They were very good as well. 100%. And they're somewhat of a bogey team as well, by the way, against PSG. Their manager always gets the best out of them. But international break, both of you. I'm asking Jimmy first. Pochettino then. What's, you know, he's sticking around, I guess. I just don't see, is he finished? What's going on? Because, you know, the perfect record's done. Fair enough. It's still early and stuff. But it's really alarming to Heath's point, just, you know, what's going on. What do you think?
That's a good question. I'm still pondering, I think. But with regard to,
because if you're going to do it, you do it right now, right? If you get rid of him, you do it right now, I think.
Will that solve anything? Or does it just try to paper over the cracks? I mean,
you're going
to
bring in Zidane.
You could bring in Zidane. You could bring in an Antonio Conte, who I think might be too intense for that collection of players. Where Sam, I think Allardyce? Zidane. Sam Allardyce is actually a great one. Big Scam Allardyce is the way to go.
Take
him to Newcastle. That's what I want. So I guess Zidane would be probably the one that I think can finesse the egos the most and is already having a proven track record with Real Madrid, who are littered with stars when he was in charge, and he got the most out of them and kept them settled. I would say I just don't think he's going to take it. Maybe he commits to a year and a half, and then he can take over the national team after the 2022 World Cup. Is something that I could potentially see. I'm sure they're courting him, or at least having conversations.
But it's only a year and a half. That is the run of this team. Is
that's
max
true? That's
a year
fair.
And a half
that's fair. That's fair.
Good it point. Gets you know the grenade rolls into the room, and you got to sort of break it all up, and all the egos got to go separate ways. That's what I would think. Just because the domestic league itself isn't that enticing for these guys, this is a super team to win in the next year and a half.
Yeah.
No. To your point, LME, it could be now. Do you wait one more? Do you wait one more month with one more transfer window and see how it goes? Because they are also coming off a tremendous win against Man City in the Champions League. So that needs to be factored into the equation as well.
And we got to move on. But just to add to everything that we've been talking about, you know, Heath talking about, you know, players not coming back. There is a manager out there without a team who literally lives on making sure that you track back, you kill yourself, and you do everything you can.
Bielsa.
Well, I was going to say Antonio Conte, but yeah, both of them do as well. And you know, he won't have any issues in terms of money and financial worries. But we'll see what happens. The truth is this: PSG perfect record is done. By the way, other big clubs who suffered, who had a worse week here? Barcelona, who were embarrassed by Benfica, they lost to Atletico Madrid, or Real Madrid, who were embarrassed by FC Sheriff and lost to Espanyol. Heath, who had a worst week, Barcelona or Real Madrid?
It's got to be Barcelona. They just stood behind their manager and then lost. Like it's like they're trying anything to just sort of play this game that's going to win the supporters back, that's going to win the locker room back, that's going to win Koeman back, that's going to whatever. And again, I just don't see how you can fix it. They don't have the ability to fire him and change somebody else. So that it's stuck like that. Luis Suarez is taunting you. It's just one of those things. They made João Felix look like the best player that I've seen, the version of him that I've been wanting to see for a long time. I think that they have to have it the toughest. I mean, again, Real Madrid on the other side could have been down 3-0 and probably should have been, and not even close to coming back into this game outside of, again, individual moments of brilliance. But the biggest embarrassment for me is Barcelona, because it just seems like they can't get out of their own way. No matter what they say in the press, the opposite happens than on the field.
I with regard to Barcelona, I'll say that let's start with the positives. They started the week great. They beat Levante 3-0 last week, and then obviously got slapped around by Benfica and then by Atleti as well. When I look at Barcelona, though, I know they're a dumpster fire. Once Messi left, I knew they were going to be a dumpster fire. So my expectations are kind of they're not exceeding expectations. They're kind of right where I expected them to
be. Their year has already been bad.
It's fine. But Madrid is a little bit more of a shock. I mean, losing to Sheriff is probably the craziest result in the history of the competition. I know. It's crazy. And then losing to Espanyol, which is a team that they haven't lost to in 21 years. Or no, this is the only second time in 25 years that they've lost to Espanyol, is crazy. Now, I do want to give some context here, because I saw some fun facts on the internet, because you always learn stuff on the internet, as one does. But in October 2019, they suffered a shock defeat to newly promoted Mallorca. October 2020, they suffered a shock defeat to newly promoted Cadiz. And in 2021, they suffered a shock defeat to newly promoted Espanyol. It's kind of an autumn tradition right now for them. Also, in October 2018, they lost to Alaves and Levante, who had been promoted in the season. And then, remember last season, they lost to Shakhtar Donetsk, and Donetsk wasn't even at full strength to like a B squad of Shakhtar at home in the Champions League, but still found a way to win the group. So
and they
can't
turned it
sleep
around,
on right. this Madrid team. You know,
I will say this, though. Carlo Ancelotti, usually who's such a defender of his players and his squad, after this game, he said, "Our plan was pretty clear, but the team were disorganized, not well positioned, very individual. These are things we need to fix. I spoke with the players who agree." Totally threw his players under the bus in that. Usually he defends his squad, but in that one, he blamed the entire team, Heath Pierce.
Hey, wasn't that Barcelona's first loss in the league, though? And now they're in ninth place. Like, that's... Jimmy, weren't you saying that before?
A lot of draws.
Like, it wasn't like how, having said that, they were undefeated. They were still undefeated on the season. Mm-hmm. Like, guess what? They're not anymore. So they can fall even further. I'm not turning my back on them being the worst.
Let's stick with Barcelona, but let's focus a little bit less on Ronald Koeman for a second and talk about the president, Joan Laporta. Because, you know, before the game against Atletico Madrid, he came out and defended Koeman. He said he needs a little bit of time. He's a Barcelona legend, et cetera, et cetera. He's, you know, in fact, I was reading, I also read and learn things on the internet, Jimmy, and I learned that also Laporta did a similar thing with Rijkaard back in the day, where Rijkaard and Barcelona were getting killed left, right, and center. I believe they had a really big loss against, I think it was Mallorca, 5-1. And maybe it was somebody else, but they lost badly and he stuck with him. And in the end, they ended second. Obviously, this is a different situation, but Laporta stuck with Koeman even before the game, kind of predicting what was going to happen. But has he made a bad situation worse for here? Because when he arrived and he won the presidency from Bartomeu, he was like, this is it. A new page is turning. I know that financially we're an absolute mess, but we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we restore everything. Not only has that not happened, it's worse. So are we putting too much blame on Koeman is what I'm saying. Is Laporta really needs to be a bigger focus?
In some capacity, yes. I think what happens is, and this is natural, but you get so caught up in that week's results. You get so caught up in the emotion of the team playing poorly or underperforming, or why are these players even on this team that I love? Like, why is Luke de Jong wearing a Barcelona kit? This blows the mind and still blows my mind. But you still have, so you have these things here, and that's what you get caught up in. But if you remember when he got hired, I remember his press conference. He knew exactly what he was walking into. Now, he thought he was going to have Messi for a little longer than he did. I think Laporte thought he was going to have the same thing. And that fell through. And now you've inherited, it's even magnified the whole problem. And what I think Laporta's mistake was acting like he wasn't backing Koeman the whole time, because he knew, and now he's coming out and saying it, that he had to walk through fire at this point. This is just where the club is at the particular moment. Mm. And somebody has to step up and do it, which is why they, and there's probably a part of me that thinks he's probably coming out now because he's been quiet for a couple of weeks because nobody wants the job. So now he has to come state publicly. And this is his way to do it and tell the board, hey, nobody wants this thing right now until we can kind of get our shit together.
Stapled some flyers up on the telephone poles. Yeah, exactly, I'm like, exactly. Looking for a manager. Nobody called.
Nobody calling. Nobody's swiping right on Barcelona right now. And so you got to stick with Koeman. And Koeman, I think, knows that. And I think he's trying to just be as relaxed about the situation as possible. He has the hand that he has. They have the players that they have. And he's trying to make the best with what he has. And they still have a lot of injuries as well. And on top of that, it's not like they're even their best guys are playing that well. Like Ter Stegen hasn't been that sharp. Pique kind of hot and cold. Busquets right now hot and cold. Coutinho had a couple chances in this game that maybe a confident Coutinho from 3, 4, 5 years ago would have hit one of those in the back of the net. Or if he's playing for Barcelona, he would have hit one in the back of the net. So I don't know. I that's all I have really have to say about it. But yes, I think that Laporta, it's interesting to see when he chooses to speak to the public about Koeman in particular and when he doesn't.
By the way, Eden Hazard also, he had a goal called back from an offside position from Benzema. But if you saw his strike, it was from 3 or 4 years ago as well. I don't know if you guys saw
the highlight. Yeah, it was good.
What a banger to the top corner. But yeah, real quick, Lisa, I agree with you on that. It's hard because people are taking all these moments and isolating them, right? So the comments of Koeman recently about the team and the state that they're in, Laporta on now backing Koeman in this moment. But again, you go back to when I think people are having trouble connecting or stringing this all together into a linear chain of events, because you go back to last year and they were actually, again, competing for a title towards the end of the season. They had gotten it on a crazy run, ultimately falling short. And people were like, wow, this guy's really turning around or creating a belief system, when it was burning all along, right? Then you lose Messi and it's still burning, except it's burning even more. And I think people are having trouble connecting the dots of knowing that he came in when it was really bad and it got worse without any of his doing, and has sort of been stuck in the middle, which I think is an impossible position to be in. I don't think anybody necessarily wants the job, but I do agree that Laporte hasn't supported or at least been public about it to where you can actually just accept that the team is in a tough place, the club is in a tough place, and then look forward, right? We're continuously looking back at the weekend and looking back at the thing that just happened and how is that connected to the next thing that's going to happen, instead of saying, hey, guys, it is horrible here. Things are really bad across the board and we're going to try to figure it out. And we're going to take it step by step. Instead, it's like, oh, they lose again. Then Koeman has to go out in the media, and then nobody from the board of directors speaks up. And it's just this constant like game where we can't move past it. And it's now starting to connect into this bigger thing.
Yeah, and I'll just finish by saying that there was a time when Barcelona played Atletico Madrid, and you thought, what can Atletico Madrid do to win this game? Now it's expected that Barcelona will lose. By the way, Barcelona's next three matches are at Camp Nou, including the first Clásico of the season, October 4th. But just very quickly, click on Atletico Madrid. they got it going. They got that 2-0 win. It's not just all about the dumpster fire that is Barcelona. Jimmy, you're Atletico Madrid. Finally got that win. They're looking good. At least this past weekend, is this a turnaround? Will they finally win games that they're meant to win?
I think that this proves that Griezmann is not a starter for Atletico Madrid. Joao Felix, I thought, was very bright, very active. Him and Luis Suarez, nice partnership. Hopefully he'll get a run of games. Thomas Lamar's evolution at Atleti, kind of starting as a left winger, kind of left back, and now kind of once he got central, I really feel like his game has taken bigger steps, and that's why I think Saúl ended up becoming out on the market because Thomas Lamar has really kind of stepped up and allowed the team to attack in a much different way than Saúl ever did. And then obviously Rodrigo De Paul, I hope he continues to play well. But yeah, they're starting to find maybe that lineup that can unlock things going forward. That said, this Barcelona team's hot trash, so I hope that Atleti can beat them. This is probably the best time to play Barcelona than maybe when they start to figure it out in some capacity moving forward, if they figure it out. But yeah, fair play to Atleti. They're still, right now, obviously taking big advantage of Madrid dropping points as well, but they're the favorites, and they have been this whole time, despite having some vulnerabilities over the last week or two.
Yeah, our friend Lucho Garcia was actually on the call, the friend of the Paramount Plus and CBS team and the podcast, and he made a few comments that I thought were really interesting. And one, if you looked at the way Atletico Madrid were playing, they were doing such a good job of finding a high striker, laying it off, and that third man runner, or that combination play, again, that's kind of comes from the training grounds, but that knowing that Barcelona just watched the ball. They're not watching the man. They're not watching the positions. They're not seeing the angles. And they were just eating them up and getting literally something that had no danger to one pass, two passes. Now they're behind the back line. And that wasn't necessarily just a knock on Barcelona, but a credit to the way Atletico are playing offensively. And Thomas Lamar is a huge part of it. I mean, unbelievable on the ball now, and just a disruptor that makes defenses really imbalanced and starts to create space for other players on the field. So overall, in the form that they're in and the way that they played against Barcelona, I don't want it to just be about Barcelona being bad, because Atletico are very good right now.
They are. My favorite part was when Diego Simeone turned around to the crowd and said, come on, we're all here, full stadium, we're winning against Barcelona, get loud. And loud they did. That's a Newcastle name, Jimmy. Maybe a Diego Simeone, or maybe a relative of Diego Simeone. He'll do just anybody for
anybody.
All right, let's keep moving here. Serie A. Des Norris, put them up on the screen, please. Of course, Fiorentina lose to Napoli, and Napoli remain perfect. 2-1, Juventus win against Torino in the Turin derby. Bologna beat Lazio 3-0. Sassuolo lose to Inter Milan as well. And let's just double check here, because we are taping, obviously, during the Atalanta AC Milan game. And that game, 70th minute, it's 2-0 to AC Milan, by the way, beating Atalanta away from home. Anything from Serie A, Jimmy, that sticks out to you?
Well, this is AC Milan. Performance right now is unbelievable, and they really set the tone. They scored in the first minute. Calabria scored, and that must have shell-shocked an Atalanta team that was welcoming Luis Muriel back into the team. We're big fans of him, of course. And again, Stefano Pioli, the manager of Milan, really pressing a lot of the right buttons in a lot of different ways. They've been a little unlucky in the Champions League so far, but they do have a tremendous team. Seeing Sandro Tonali score the second is impressive as well, with Brahim Diaz and Rebic up top. It's just, it's really, really impressive on this side of things. Now, for Lazio, I just want to bring them up really quick. Them losing 3-0 to Bologna. I want to buy into the Maurizio Sarri hype train, but then I see them play sometimes, or most recently, and they're missing something. And I wonder if Maurizio Sarri can figure that out. And it seems a little bit more on the defensive side, because obviously they have a plethora of options going forward. But losing 3-0 to Bologna is not going to help them even scratch the top four. They have to grind out those results. And even if they don't win, they can't lose. And so that, I was keeping an eye on that game for sure.
Yeah.
Real quick, how many more wins in a row do we need Napoli before they're a title favorite? I mean, how long can we saw AC Milan last year for a long time sort of run the front of the league until effectively Inter Milan went out of all European competition and then just turned a corner. And I mean, they were going punch for punch, and AC Milan looked more vulnerable than Inter Milan did. But certainly Napoli have to be in the discussion with the way that they're getting results.
100%. The problem is that Milan's right under them with 3 points, and they're definitely favorites. I didn't have them this high up this early on. I'm sticking with AC Milan, but Napoli are no joke. 7 wins 7 wins. They're perfect. 18 goals scored. Only conceded 3, by the way.
Yeah.
Very good defensive.
Jump in on Napoli, they have 18 goals, 4-3 against, as you mentioned. They're doing it on both sides of the ball, which is something I didn't think we could say about them in the past, that they would be very good going forward. You'd probably see some 3-2 wins, some 4-3 wins.
Lots of back, yeah.
Yeah, but they kind of where Lazio is right now. And it'll be interesting to see if Luciano Spalletti can get them across the finish line. I think Napoli at times have that, you know, Borussia Dortmund, Bayer Leverkusen, you know, they'll challenge Bayern until about 2 months left, and then they're going to fall apart. And we've seen Napoli do that in the past. And I wonder if they can kind of shake that mentality. And they just have to create a little bit of distance. The longer that Milan and Inter hang around, and Juve with the big win again against Torino this weekend and the Turin derby, you know, I feel like you just got to clip Napoli's heels, to stay on their heels. And at some point they're going to trip up. And then that's when you can leapfrog them and get first.
Which is what AC Milan is doing right now. Yep, but yes, to Heath's point, they do remain very, very favored in terms of this Serie A race. All right, let's talk about the weekend's biggest. Let's begin with the weekend's biggest winner out of anywhere in Europe. Anywhere in Europe, player or team, who was the weekend's biggest winner? Heath Pierce, who was the weekend's biggest winner?
Oh, man, it has to be a player for me. That's Gianluca Busio scoring his first goal in Serie A. I think it's a monumental moment for him because he's playing on such a team that's struggling so much, you know, to compete in Serie A. I think a lot of that gets swept under the rug. But the way he's playing is what we saw back in the early Gold Cup days, where you go, wow, this guy is really phenomenal. But it's really hard to give credit to a team that is chasing points right now. And for him to score a goal in the closing moments, it was in stoppage time, is a huge boost, not just for the team or for the U.S. National League, but for him as a player. I think he's really starting to establish himself. And also one of these players that's flying under the radar of our big overly hyped, or not overly hyped, but rightfully hyped stars in the U.S. And I think that's a good position for a young player to be in instead of being overhyped at the moment.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to go with the little Davids that beat the Goliaths. I'm going to say Eintracht beating Bayern for the first time in Munich in 21 years. Espanyol beating Real Madrid. Utrecht actually went into Amsterdam and beat Ajax to knock them off their perch, the first game they lost all season. And Rennes beating PSG. That is nothing short of amazing. So I want to give a shout out to those for Davids against these Goliaths.
I like it. We have a comment coming up here. Tony, or is it Tori? Tony? Yeah, Tony. Yeah. Weekend's biggest winner, Mo Salah's agent.
I love it. Tony, I think
Mo Salah's agent is probably doing fine, guys. I think
Tony wins, I think, because it's true. The conversation right now, and we'll have Fabrizio Romano on tomorrow to discuss, but obviously about that new contract for Mohamed Salah. At this point, you got to offer it. And, you know, what better way to argue for your client to get a new good spanking and good contract than to get a result like that? So, yeah, that's a good one.
What's the one? 500? 500 a week? Is that what the ask is?
I believe, you know, well, I got to have the numbers in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like that. I mean, just give the man what he wants is what I'm saying. He's already a Liverpool legend. He needs to just get the money. But yes, well done, Tony, his agent. I was going to go with Brentford, to be honest. But they've only lost to Brighton, their 7th stoppage time winner against West Ham. It's 4 points away from the top, Chelsea number one. Like, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, good shout.
I mean, it's early on, but, you know, definitely worth it. All right, let's go to weekend's biggest loser, Jimmy Conrad. Who's the weekend's biggest loser?
I'm going to say Ronald Koeman because he still has to manage Barcelona. I mean, he could have lucked out and got fired, probably banked a ton of money and was like, I don't have to worry about any of this crap anymore, but he's still in charge.
You could be in the Canary Islands, Ronald.
He's still in charge. Yes. So I think Ronald Koeman is the biggest loser. He's still got to be in charge of Barcelona.
Heath?
I got to go with Bayern Munich because that loss to Eintracht Frankfurt, and while we can probably laugh about this in a few months, allowed both Leverkusen and Dortmund to get back into the title race. You know, it was one that it just seemed like it was going to be an early runaway, but after a slow start from Dortmund, Leverkusen have been okay. But now the title race is back on. They're sitting on 16 points, Leverkusen on 16, and Borussia Dortmund on 15. Freiburg also on 15, but I'm not too worried about them chasing it down. And then RB Leipzig now chasing their way back up. Jesse Marsch might be a little bit safer in his job. But yeah, Bayern Munich, I think a huge loss for them that's now allowing other teams to be part of that conversation again.
Yeah, and Lewandowski didn't get a goal, which is pretty impressive. I don't know. My biggest loser? I don't know. There's so many. Yeah, by the way, Mohamed Salah does want 500,000 a week. So,
well, pounds, by the way.
Okay. Well, I guess the biggest loser is Liverpool's board to have to deal with this. Then I guess that would be the biggest loser in terms of that one. But very good there. All right, let's finish up here. Ancelotti, says our producer, biggest loser. The sheriff, goddammit, he says. He wants to put respect on sheriff's name. All right, we'll give you Carlo Ancelotti this. Absolutely. All right, let's go with let's talk about this. Obviously, international break coming up, USMNT, World Cup qualifiers, and these two fine gentlemen will be riding this journey with you, Heath Pierce and Jimmy Conrad, previewing, recapping all the good content as the USMNT face some very, very big games. When aren't they big? Of course, they need to make it to the World Cup this time around, and we'll see what happens. But you can follow them with us on Qué Golazo. But let's talk about the Americans that did well this weekend and anybody in particular that you wanted to shout out. I know that Heath mentioned Busio, but is there anything else that you wanted to discuss? I think, Des, you're going to put up our USMNT roster here. Yep, there you go. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see all of them. But in terms of anybody that stuck out for you this weekend, Jimmy, anybody?
Well, on the negative side, Fulham did lose to Coventry. Good, I guess. Yeah. And Anthony Robinson did give up a penalty.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, so he'll be, I don't know how good he'd be feeling about himself coming into it, but I'm excited for him to continue to lock down the left side for us. That's on the negative side. On the positive side, I want to give a shout out to Brendan Aaronson because FC Red Bull Salzburg have won each of their first 10 games in a single Austrian Bundesliga season for the second time after 2018-2019 season. No other team has managed to do that even once.
Fantastic.
So that's something to take into consideration, and he has become a very pivotal member of this team. And I'm excited to see him continue to grow wearing the stars and stripes as well.
I love it.
Man, I like that.
Pierce, oh,
okay.
Who you?
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go with, Ricardo Pepi is my guy. So I'm just happy just that his name's on this list. Timo Weah had an assist, to Jonathan David, which I thought was great. Yunus Musa played, Weston McKennie played, which I think is really important. Busio, I think is now starting to challenge for that spot legitimately with his form at club play and not just on quote unquote potential. So I think that's a huge thing. Tyler Adams started again in sort of a midfield hybrid role. So those are the players that I'm most excited about getting them back into the national team in terms of form, you know, regular playing. I would love it if there was these guys on the stat sheet every week, like we see when Christian Pulisic is healthy or Gio Reyna is healthy. I think that brings a little bit more stats and excitement to this team, but overall seeing players in form and playing well, I think, is more important to me coming into this group and seeing where it's going to be or how they're going to compete for points. As Jimmy said, they need to get a perfect 9 points. No, I maybe said seven, but I'll attribute a quote of Jimmy saying they need 9 points out of this or bust.
By the way, he's not in this roster, but Joe Scally scored his first goal.
He did.
Gladbach. What do you think about that? Should Scally have been here in the first place, Jimmy?
Well, Greg Berhalter came out and addressed the Joe Scally situation.
What did he say?
But he talked to Joe and basically said that given where Joe is at this particular moment and that he doesn't have experience in these types of games, he's going to lean on the guys that already do have this experience that had already kind of gone through the trenches with the team through the summer.
Oh, whatever though, huh? Like Jack Moore, George Bello, these guys, you know, playing in the Bundesliga.
That was the argument.
I'm with you. Why wouldn't you bring him in? He doesn't have to play, but at least bring him into the group, get him, acclimated to the personality and the culture. And then you can start to ease him and see how he does in training. Even those are going to be pretty light for the most part, but just see how he does and how he fits in because he knows, you know? I think it's a big miss, especially because we can call in like 75 people right now.
You know what it feels it feels a little bit like there is a little cohesion to this group. I think not changing too much because you certainly want to bring in most of these guys. I don't know if they could have brought in a 28th. That seems like you probably could have. Why not bring in 40 if you can?
Right.
That seemed a little bit odd. It also seems like one of those things. It reminds me a little bit of the Matthew Hoppe situation where no one had ever heard of Matthew Hoppe till he scored a hat trick.
That's right.
Right. He was spending a lot of time with the reserve team. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's on the scene. He's got a hat trick and now he's starting every game and we're trying to get him to Barcelona. Right. Yeah. at that point. And I think Joe Scally is putting together actually a good run of form. He's a right-footed player. He's been playing a lot of left back for the team, gets his first goal. It was an interesting goal, a great finish, started around the half line. But one of those ones where you're like, okay, I want to see it for a longer run of form. And the difference between him and the other players, again, if you're talking about defenders and Shaq Moore, George Bello, it's just professional experience, period, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those other players at least have more professional games under their belt to know time and place and the feeling of things. I think it is a miss not to bring him in. Hopefully he comes in for the next camp, but that's a great shout, LME, in terms of somebody that may have been robbed of an opportunity to at least be around, because you can't get that experience unless you're around it. You don't exactly have to play right in those games. Exactly, you know, right. I always go back to Yunus Musa talking about Denver when he wasn't playing in the Nations League. And he was like, man, I was nervous. My hands were sweating on the sideline, seeing this atmosphere. Like, that is a huge thing to learn from, even if you're not playing.
That's yeah. By the way, my favorite part was our friend Grant Wall tweeted like, Joe Scally like scored. He should be part of this. I wonder why Brad Halter didn't do it. And everybody was trolling him, going, oh, you should have asked him. You can do it. And it's like, well, he did ask. People are so crazy. By the way, that was it. But let's recap some games here. AC Milan ends up winning 3-0, or at least at the moment it is. It's not over, but 3-0. So you could say it's pretty much over. Rafael Leao with the third one. It's not over yet. Thank you. But it's 3-0 to AC Milan. And Julian Alvarez, who, by the way, was scouted heavily by European clubs this summer, he opened the scoring in the Super Clásico. River Plate 1, Boca Juniors.
Oh, wait, really quick. I'm a Boca fan, and the fact that Marcus Rojo already got a red card in the 16th minute just completely pisses me off. And also, it doesn't make me too surprised. And also, going into this one, out of 13 games, Boca has only scored 11 goals. So the fact that we're down early is not a good sign. I don't think we're getting back into it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's true. So let's finish on that note, by the way.
God, but I'm hot right now. God damn it, Marcus Rojo. The guy has his name literally translates Rojo into red.
He's exactly.
Walkie red card. Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, as I mentioned, we got some Fabrizio Romano content on Monday. But after that, these two will take over to take care of some USMNT business as the World Cup qualifiers continue in October. Before we say goodbye, Heath Pierce, thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you. And Marcos Rojo was the best player to ever play at Manchester United. That's what they're missing.
I knew you were going
to
say. Jimmy Conrad, thank you, brother.
I can't believe anything that he says anymore after a statement like that. Come on, Heath.
I can't wait till both of you get going this week as well. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Follow the Que Golazo podcast on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod. Subscribe to the Que Golazo page on YouTube and hit the notification bell. And of course, subscribe to Que Golazo wherever you listen to your pods. We will see you next time. Have a great end and rest of your weekend. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.